Oh, baby, you know what time it is. It's Wednesday, and there's only one thing that goes down on a Wednesday. It's What the Fuck Happened Wednesday podcast. Paulie Burmeister here, Chris Sims, episode number 323.
Wow.
Here for NBC Sports. Big number. They're paying me $1 million per episode, so they owe me a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yep. Generic open there. No clips. Doesn't matter. We're here to entertain you, and we got a lot of stuff to break down, certainly. Herbert, Burrow, Bucks O, and D, Steelers-Ravens game, 49ers, Seahawks. We're going to hit it all along with some other topics along the day. What's up, everybody? I'm Chris Sims. This is Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour.
Yes.
And you're Paulie Burmeister, the best-dressed 50-year-old man I know.
I appreciate that. It's very nice of you to say that. I'm sitting here watching you, and I wasn't going to bring this up, but I'm watching you. I'm smiling. We didn't have the normal kind of attempted humor funny open.
Yes.
I've got it for you.
Yeah, okay? Good.
I had a way random dream about you last night.
Whoa.
You want this?
Hold on. Yep, I do.
You can
this
say
is
no.
Great.
No. You can say no.
I really want to hear it. I mean, yes. I mean, it's going to be a little weird if it gets weird, but
well,
it's okay.
It's very much PG.
If I'm walking around naked in your dream. I got to think about
there's a new host
here.
There's nothing creepier uncomfortable.
Right.
It's just like it's really
I was there in your dream.
Okay,
yeah.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
I was at my oldest boy was little in this dream. He was like in the 4 or 5 year old range. We're at a t-ball game where the kids can't hit it, so someone just kind of lobs it in there.
That's where I come in handy. We've advanced
from the t-ball.
Yeah,
we're just lobbing it in.
Yeah.
For some reason, they need one of the parents to come out and do it. I didn't know you were there. Out of the other side comes Chris Sims. I'm
right.
Like, hey, that's my man. He's going to lob a few in.
Right.
You just start throwing gas. Like, you're throwing it
like
95 against these
kids.
It's like a bad Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah.
You're blowing it by the kids, and they're crying.
Right.
And people are looking at me like,
yeah.
You know this
you
guy?
You know this guy?
Are you going to do something? I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I grab a bat.
Right.
And apparently the on-deck circle was in center field, and you had to go through a McDonald's. So I'm standing in the McDonald's line.
Randomness of dreams.
Pushing
right
people
there.
Out of the way, waiting to get up to bat against
yeah.
you. And I decided I don't like my bat. It's got
right.
too much like whip and too much flex in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
And as I'm thinking, I don't think I can hit Chris's heat with this bat,
right.
I woke up.
Right. Oh, damn. Yeah. And I'll take a large fry with some chicken McNuggets. That was so crazy.
What's
random.
That mean?
I don't know. We need a psychologist there for that one.
The mound was like 30 feet away. So,
right.
I mean, not only were you throwing 90 plus,
but
like,
I was
nobody
right there.
Could see it because you were so close to the plate.
That's amazing. I don't know where that came. You must have been thinking about the podcast and having to work with me before you went to bed.
Yeah.
So I was in your brain mixed up with. I mean, the funnier thing is it's like in the past where your kids were younger, too.
Yeah.
I like that aspect of it.
And McDonald's?
Dreams, I can't make sense of them sometimes. I have no idea. Now, I was that dad that would, like, a few years ago, the year before COVID, it was pitchers get to pitch.
Yeah.
But if it got to a certain count, I think if we got to a full count and there was too many balls after that because they weren't letting walks, then somebody had to come in and pitch the ball.
There
and that's
go.
Where I would do it.
Yeah.
I didn't throw
gas. Did you
lob it? I didn't throw gas. I did. And on a few times, some of the kids were so small.
Yeah.
And I'm standing up there. I was like, man, this is weird. They're not used to seeing a ball come from all the way up here. So I'd get on my knees and throw it that way.
I remember
too.
That stage too.
Yeah. You got to do it just so it's fair. And so like, what? They're not used to Randy Johnson pitching here. So let's get down to their level where they're used to seeing a ball come out of somebody's hands.
Made the kids cry. Chris.
Yeah.
Come on.
Made them cry. Yes. Love it. Love it.
Okay. Football?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Football. There's some mysteries out there.
Some
teams up, some teams down. They're hard to figure out even though it's December.
No doubt.
Chargers.
Yeah, they're one of them.
One of the poster teams for that. Fun to watch,
right.
But you really don't know what you're going to get offensively. So last week at Cincinnati, it was good.
Yeah.
Really good. They won 41-22. Last 4 weeks, 20 points against Minnesota.
Right.
41 Pittsburgh, 13 Denver, and then 41 Sunday.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Well, I think the big thing I look at more than anything is the way they called the game, the way they approached this game a little bit against the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, the Chargers are one of those teams you mentioned. Man, Cincinnati is also, I think, one of those teams I would put in there. I actually have less questions about Cincinnati than the Chargers.
Mm.
I'll say it. I don't mean to be disrespectful. I think if those two teams play each other 10 times, I think the Bengals would probably win 7 of them.
Really?
At least 6, I'm going to say. But I'm not, like, totally confident in that. But just from what watching the game live, watching it on film, yeah, did I come away thinking I felt Cincinnati was a little bit better of a team? Certainly, but not so much so to where a few great plays by Justin Herbert and company or some mistakes by Cincinnati can set them up. But I think the big thing for me, especially offensively, is, and we've talked about this in weeks past, lack of a big play, lack of speed down the field. You know, too much 6-yard throws, 8-yard throws, where teams have been able to play aggressive. Now, they got Pittsburgh on a night where, you know, they were undermanned, had a bunch of injuries, and they tore them up. I didn't sit there and go, oh, there's anything special schematically. This game, there was schematical, like, wait, we're going to have an approach in this game to take shots down the field, open up the field a little bit. Cincinnati will give us some one-on-one opportunities down the field. Mm-hmm. And you got too talented of a quarterback to continue to be throwing the ball 6 yards down the field. You know,
so
again,
true.
Their meat and potatoes offense is really good. I like it. But even when you have a good meat and potatoes, you got to have some other side dishes to keep people honest, right? And that's where I think I felt like they have dropped the ball a little bit to some of their stale points. Where this week, like I said, there's, I would say, 8 to 10 plays where I go, oh, these are game plan just for this week. And it makes their whole offense look better. You know, one, it gets people off their running game a little bit, and then it gets now their 6 and 8 yard passes they like to throw, right? Yeah. New Orleans Saints style.
Right.
They're more open, and there's a fear factor in the back end from Cincinnati because they got, whoa, you know, they're attacking us today. We can't just play downhill and aggressive on their normal stuff.
I know you have some good plays to look at that are really good examples of what the Chargers did at Cincinnati. Before we get there, to set it up even more, let's take a look at kind of what you were talking about graphically. Passes 20 yards or downfield or more this season. The first 11 games, only 8% of the total passes, 20 yards or more.
Right.
Sunday in Cincinnati got up to 20%. You know, what really shocks me is that if you ask me who are the best 5 deep ball throwers in the NFL,
I mean,
Herbert is somewhere on that list.
No doubt about it. It's everybody. I mean, Drew Brees, we talked about it on Sunday Night Football a few weeks ago. Same thing when they got a little bit in one of the games where we were talking like, man, just let it go a little bit. You got to attack. But I think that's the thing of the game. Now, of course, hey, Cincinnati messed up some things early on, right? But either way, it doesn't matter. The first 3 touchdowns from the Chargers offense were all set up by a big pass play to get them in position to score the touchdown, or it actually scored the touchdown. So I think I like that aspect of it. Hey, the other thing I think is just to bring up, you know, I would like to say this. I don't look at numbers. I send Pete notes.
You leave that to us.
And I just go, my eye tells me they threw the ball more down the field in this game than any game all year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pete goes, what? You know, he'll come in the room the next morning and actually the numbers back it up. And that's what he tells me. And that makes me feel good. But I think that's a good thing. You know, the Bengals defense, good. It's sound in a lot of ways. But the one thing I'll say about them, a little predictable.
Mm.
A little bit too...
Too much zone or too much man?
Well, just a little too basic in general. You line up, you kind of know what you're getting. Now, we're breaking the huddle. You can kind of see, oh, it's quarters this play. Oh, it's man this play. You know, I'd like to see a little bit more trickeration and disguises. And then back to our old favorite thing. I'd like to see a little bit more blitz two, drop two. A little bit of that. Not that they need a whole lot of it, almost like the vice versa of like what we're talking about with the Chargers. You got a good meat and potatoes. We just need a few side dishes to change things up every now and then so a quarterback can't feel so comfortable or an offensive coordinator. But either way, I like the Chargers' approach in this one big time.
I think the key word for that approach is aggressive from start to finish. I think it's especially in the beginning. So let's get you up here. Early first quarter, scoreless, second down 11.
Yeah, second down and 11. And, you know, I think we got to – first drive of the game, right? They're in a running set. It's 3 receivers, but it's a running set. All right, and you got Herbert underneath center, which I love too. Again, underneath center is some of the best ways to create big plays in the pass game. All right, so there's that aspect. It's a zone coverage, a 3-deep zone, all right? And, of course, it's like a match zone. So it's like to your thing where it's going to look a little bit like man-to-man on the outside with the corners, all right? And it's a simple play. I mean, it's simple. It's going to be, you know, fake the run to the left. Here comes the backside tight end to pull under and block to make it look like more of the run play itself. You know, we see usually typically, right, like the post route with the deep crosser here, right? We see that a lot. Every week teams run that. Well, instead of just doing that, they kind of changed it up and went –
fake the post, corner route to Mike Williams, and then Keenan Allen ran the crossing route.
And they're ready to max protect here as
well. They're ready to max protect. I mean, give the guy some time and let him read, let your receivers who are talented work downfield, and this is where you can strike and make explosive plays. So you see he's got pretty good protection. He's got a nice pocket to throw into. And here's the aspect I like about it a lot. Like, and this is to me, again, you got to have guts to do this a little bit, but this is a real, has real value in the NFL. You see, it's a one-on-one shot. He's not wide open. But, you know, guys like Mike Williams, back to like what we've always talked about, 50-50 balls aren't really 50-50 balls with a guy like Mike Williams.
Right.
They're not. It's more like a 70-30 ball. And you add that on to the fact that the DB's got his back turned as the ball's in the air. You're going to like those chances anytime. Either way, it's a perfect throw. Right? And not like it reinvented the wheel with, oh, wow, this is some crazy play, but good basics, aggressive, and tying together with an offensive play that you run a whole lot. You know, I mean, how many times have we broken down the inside zone, tight end goes to backside, they press the front gap, if they add it, if they don't, there's going to be a backside hole, right?
Right.
Well, they do that a lot. So they use that off of that, it ties it together. It's not like, oh, wow, our team has to learn some new crazy play, but it's effective, and it gets Cincinnati thinking early to where they got to back the fuck off of some
right.
of the other stuff.
Take it right here and pause it. And if you're just listening, hopefully you're watching with us. But if you're listening, I want to pause it right here. So Justin Herbert's getting set up. And thinking back to where this conversation started about us wondering, why aren't they throwing the ball downfield more often like this, like they did Sunday, on every single Sunday. Hit play, and let's watch the ease with which he throws the ball 50 yards. It's like he's throwing a screen pass. Really, watch his mechanics.
I know.
How does that guy not let that ball go 10 times a game like
that? I don't know either. And that's where I think the coaching staff's dropped the ball there. That's where, and it added to it. You know, we talked a little last week with my father, right? Chargers are pass protecting great. They have plenty of talent up front to let these type of plays develop and let him throw the ball down the field. This is more what we saw from him last year.
Yeah.
I think if they add this element to their offense, they're going to be scary. And yes, you're right. It's as easy as it gets. To me, it's very – you know, I'm going to say Tom Brady-ish.
Yeah.
You know, that's where Brady doesn't get his credit for his arm all the time, too, because they're so big and long. They can throw the ball 50 yards, and it looks like,
great
to your point, they're throwing a five-yard pass.
Yeah.
And less effort, less moving parts, ball on the money.
Right on the money.
Yeah, great.
Interesting
catch,
that you mentioned Brady, because I think about them in December last year. They kind of – they didn't do a 180, but they really started to focus on tight formations
Max
and the ground game.
Do all that.
And it worked very well later in the season. Right. Maybe the Chargers, you know, they've had it around a little bit. Now that the games are even more important, maybe they lean on it a little bit more like Tampa Bay did with the run game.
I hope so, because, again, you got – with Guyton, Williams, Keenan Allen, all have a little
good
size.
Line, as you
pointed
out.
Exactly. All have a little speed. Not that they're like game-breaking speed, but, you know, then two, hey, they're all pretty good route runners too. So, hey, let them post corner, corner post, work some double move type aggressive down the field throws. I really like the way they approach the start of this game.
All right, Herbert, 47 yards to Mike Williams as we move along here in this game, leads to the second Chargers touchdown. As you mentioned, you know, Williams, if he wasn't scoring the touchdown, he was setting it up pretty well.
Setting it up pretty well is right. And here's again another, you know, this is not a reinventing the wheel here, but, you know, with this play, they know the coverage they got here. It's a little bit like a quarters match type of coverage. You know, it's really quarters. I think 21 Mike Hilton's the only one that's involved in like a man-to-man principle here as far as in the slot against Mike Williams, and I'm going to stand up. Okay, but you got one, two, three, four. I think they're just letting him match up with Mike Williams. Mike Hilton versus Mike Williams. And, hey, nothing that is special here, okay? You know, first off, they're really trying to work the out route to Keenan Allen, all right? But I think he pulls away, doesn't really necessarily like the way the backer's kind of floating underneath it, right? So he thinks that's a little tight. You can kind of tell. I hope you can tell. But Wilson's kind of floating underneath it. He doesn't want to take that risk. The corner sees this, and he's kind of being aggressive on the hitch route. And the two things I like about this, just, again, the aggressive mentality like we're talking about, not a crazy play. But this is the other thing we're seeing. I just feel like Pittsburgh, ever since the Pittsburgh game, the light in his head has gone off to, wait, I'm a really good athlete. Let me run around and move in the pocket a little bit more. I don't need to be always Mr. Big, Strong Guy. I'm going to just throw in the pocket or throw over people. He's going to get outside the pocket here. I'm all for that. Buys himself a little time. And again, like you see here, now it basically plays like man-to-man down the field. And not like this is the most complicated play ever. I'm not trying to say, oh, wow. But to me, this was not even a part of their offense a lot of the time. It was always, let's be 75% completion percentage.
Yeah.
Let's always keep our team in a good down and distance. That's cool. But it's hard, like we've talked about, to go into the playoffs, play better defenses, and think you're going to go on a 12-play, 70-play drive
right.
every game.
Not
at
gonna
some
happen.
Point, you got to make some explosive yeah. plays like the Chiefs or the Bucks or you know all the other teams we've seen in the Super Bowls over the last few years
yeah.
because they have that element. Yeah, they can do 12-play, 75, but they don't want to do that every drive. You got to make some plays.
Take it back to the beginning there,
yeah.
Chris. And this is nitpicking because it was a wonderful throw. It was a
right.
great catch. But protection is very good against
yeah.
a four-man rush.
Yeah.
He leaves the pocket.
Yeah.
Didn't have to.
Didn't
Does
have
that bother
to.
You at all?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me because I haven't seen enough of it to go, oh, wait, this is a habit or an issue.
Okay.
You know, I think here, more or less, when he looked at Keenan Allen to his right side here on the little slot out route, you know, I think he was honestly still looking at him, trying to kind of create a better angle to where maybe he could still throw it to him.
Okay.
And then realized, I don't know if it's going to be there. Wait, I got Mike Williams way down there one-on-one. Because, two, what happens is, and again, it's tough to see from some of these angles, all right? But you'll see, you know, it is all on Keenan Allen. He's going to slowly move out here. He's still looking at him. I think he still thinks, wait, this coverage, I should get him. But as we go on here, you're going to see, and I'm going to try to pause it right at the right spot here. You know, the safety has driven on the out route, right? So that's what leads it, I think, to him ultimately going, wait, the hell with it. I'm going to let it go downfield. See, so when Keenan Allen comes out, not only does Wilson float underneath it, this safety starts to drive down, and this safety's pushing over. I think his eyes just naturally took him over there. And that's what got him to it. But I love it. I do. I love it. And, of course, if he got a real man-to-man type of coverage or something like that, that would probably be his first read to look at this play.
Of course, yeah.
So, that's again, they're attacking at least. And I think that gives them a fighting chance going into the future.
His numbers, 26 completions for 317. It's about 12 yards of completion.
Yeah.
Anytime you're near 10, it's pretty good.
You're doing good.
If you're over 10, it's one of the ways to interpret that they had an aggressive game plan.
Well,
it was well executed.
What happened, too, as it went on, is like Bengals backed off. So now Austin Eckler's catching the ball out of the backfield on little drop passes. I mean, check down passes. And he's getting 6 and 8 yards per every time he touches the football. Because you've done this, now you've scared them to death to where – you know, underneath completions, you can start to really gash defenses as well.
We have one more look here, 44-yard yeah. completion. Early second quarter, Chargers starting to separate here up 16-0.
Yeah, 16-0, you know. And again, we're not showing all there. There was another little package of plays I wanted to show, too, that I thought was cool as far as just game planning. And again, just like we're talking about, a few wrinkles to you know, just spicing up the offense a little. Just make the defense think a little. Here, this to me is really cool. Now, again, Herbert's going to get the ball in the shotgun and roll to the right. I mean, when people see roll to the right, I mean, they're thinking, wait, cross, maybe crosser here. This guy's going to run an out route, something of that nature. Something's going to be coming across the middle. And they're going to play to that effect here with the Bengals and run, okay, run to the right, Justin. And they're going to make it look like, okay, he's clearing out and they're doing all this to hit Keenan Allen on an in cut, right? And this guy's going to run his single cut over here. And I can't even remember what he ran. I think he runs a deep out. But that's what so the defense sees this route combination and they're going, oh, all right, he's just trying to come over 1 to 2 to the backside. But what they do is they throw a little curveball. As he starts to get down here and kind of go through the inside shoulder of the safety, he breaks to the backside corner.
Mm.
And now, this is where the old adage of, arm strength is not important, kind of shows to be important on these plays. Because now, first off, like, yeah, sorry, the Washington football team's not calling this play with Tyler Heinicke. All right, there's a handful of quarterbacks because they're just not calling it. It's never going to be on their radar. They'll never call it ever in the history of their game.
The 50-yard flag route doesn't exist for everybody.
The 50-yard flag route, right, as you run to the other edge of the numbers, all right, and set up on your own 45-yard line and now launch back. And, again, it's not the most perfect throw.
Gave
he probably
chance,
could have got
though.
It out. But, again, it's a pretty good-sized receiver,
yep.
One-on-one downfield, and this time not even with a corner. It's Jesse Bates, a safety, who I think is a hell of a player, not having his best year this year. But nonetheless, you take your top three receivers on a safety one-on-one down the field all the time. All the time. So that ends up in a touchdown. And to me, that was the difference in the football game as far as, you know, they scored touchdowns. It wasn't efficient. Oh, we got down there and kicked a field goal or any of that. It was aggressive. We're going to push the envelope. And it put a lot of pressure on the Bengals' defense. A
couple of things stand out there watching those three plays, Chris.
Yeah.
Number one, Herbert's a beautiful deep ball thrower.
Beautiful.
But number two, and I think even more importantly on this day, looking at those highlights, his receivers really came through for him.
They definitely did.
In a big way downfield.
I'm sure they were excited about the game plan. They probably realized, wait, why aren't we throwing the ball down the field more?
Right.
So to get those opportunities, and I would be shocked if it doesn't continue.
Well, that's it. I want to finish where we started here with this question from the Armchair GM3. Hey, guys, I'm wondering why you think the Chargers rarely throw the deep ball. We're really finishing where we started here. Justin Herbert is one of the better deep throwers in the league. It seems like many of the plays, the receivers are 5 or 15 yards downfield.
Yeah, I don't have the exact answer. What I would try to tell you by connecting dots a little bit, you got Joe Lombardi, who came from the Saints. They're all about efficiency and – you know, let's keep our offense in good positions because they believe in their playbook and they believe if you get in 2nd and 6 or 7, they got a great list of plays for that. And if you get them in the 3rd and 2, they go, oh, we got you by the balls and we're going to be able to do whatever we want. So that's kind of how they believe in New Orleans' Joe Lombardi. But, you know, to me, again, it goes back to our old thing with like team building or assessing your own team. Are you taking advantage of all your assets you got on your team? Well, one of the greatest assets you got on the team is a quarterback and his ability to throw the ball down the field. And I think they realize this is going to open the field up. They're wasting that part of his talent. And, you know, they have more to offer on the offensive side of the ball. So I'm glad to see them finally make the adjustment. And I think it's going to make them a lot more dangerous going forward.
So offensively, they were extremely aggressive throwing the ball downfield. Kind of translated to the defense as well, or seeped over to that side, because there was a lot of pressure on Joe Burrow. And whether they were doing it with a blitz or just the front four, I'm not sure. We can take a look at that. But anytime you add together sacks, they had 6. Turnovers 4, and the number is up into double digits.
Yeah.
Your defense deserves a lot of credit.
They definitely do. You know, they're well coached in the pass game. They really are. They do have pass rushers, that's for sure. We can talk about it. The only issue they really got is they can't stop the run. They can't. You know, and they're undersized in there. Their Covington, he played good in this game to slow down the run a little bit. Number 95, their defensive tackle.
They did a nice job against Mixon.
They did. They hung in there. You know, and again, where I would argue is just a little bit like where I would have loved to have seen this game played a little cleaner to really, I think we would have got a better feel for each team. But, you know, hey, the Bengals, before they got warmed up, they were down 16-0.
Right.
You know, and then they went 3-and-out, and it was 24-0. So they had to get back to the pass. They never really got to, like, say, okay, we can lean on them with our run game a little bit. The game played out in a favor, in a way that I think favors the Chargers. But I'm not going to take, you know, again, I know it sounds like I'm making excuses for them right now. Hey, Uchenna Nwosu. I mean, hey, he beat Jonah Williams at left tackle. Man, mano y mano. You know, if there's an issue that I do look at with the Bengals, they're not the best pass protecting team. Mm. I really like their offense. I like the way they run the ball. I love the way they tie their play action and bootlegs together. They always take a few shots down the field, like we're talking about with the Chargers. Joe Burrow and those receivers, when they got one-on-ones on the outside, they'll take those and throw it. They will, but you know, between strip sack fumble, oh, we got a 60-yard bomb down the right sideline to Ja'Marr Chase. What? He tipped the ball up and it got intercepted? You know, there you go right off the bat after a good first drive by the Chargers where you're down 16-0 and you got some issues there.
So Burrow was pressured 40% of his dropbacks against the Chargers. Do you think that was a game plan thing? Chargers saw what you just pointed out, hey, they don't protect that well,
and they
dialed it up a little more?
I think so. I mean, you know, again, I should ask Pete, and I didn't ask him this, but I'd be interested to know, I mean, how much did the Chargers really blitz? I didn't get the sense watching the game that it was crazy. I think they just realized, wait, we got some mismatches here. It's a kind of a young, still learning offensive line. line with Cincinnati. I think that's the big thing that, you know, I would say about them. You know, they got two guys on the right side that are young as far as Adeniji, and they started another young kid. I'm blanking on his name. I got to look it up either way at right tackle. So they got him, Jonah Williams. Hey, this is his, you know, he's still learning left tackle. So, yeah, they got beat just mano a mano, but I don't feel like it was dialing up the pressure that really did it. You know, I just feel like it was Bosa, Tillery, and company that, you know, got after their ass a little bit.
Yeah, Bosa was limited, you know, played well less than half the snaps, effective when he was out there. But, right. I mean, credit to them that they got a lot of that pressure without him on the field.
They're, like, Staley is one of the guys that does what we talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be five-man pressures a whole lot. It's going to be the illusion of a blitz. It's a lot of two guys drop out, two guys
there
came.
There was no illusion with that Cincinnati defense.
No.
Like you just that's pointed what I'm out beforehand.
See, I meant to point that out. Gosh, damn it. See, you're right. Well, but you're right. You kind of
see. Come back to it. You said
you
it
saw,
before. That
right.
Not a lot of disguise. They do a lot of the same thing. It's quarterback walks up and it's fairly predictable.
Fairly comfortable. Right.
There's only three plays.
Yeah.
Small sample size. But
right.
All three, I was keeping an eye on that. And it, you know, it played out exactly the way
like
they lined up.
Nothing like we've shown with the great defenses
there
where
was
you
no
go,
confusion
look at this,
up front
I don't
all.
Know what the hell this is. Exactly right. Exactly right. Thank you for getting me back on track there. Yes.
You got it.
Yeah, but that's something. And the Chargers are not that. The Chargers disguise well. The Chargers play defenses where you go, I'm not sure what the hell the coverage is over here, but they got everybody locked up. And that's where they can be a pain in the ass if they get you into the pass game only type of offense.
And when the turnovers and the sacks add up to 10, it's a very good representation of what you just talked about, that the quarterback was probably not only pressured,
right,
but probably unsure at the snap as well.
Yep.
Let's peek ahead to both teams coming up. Chargers hosting the Giants, maybe with Jake Fromm.
Yep.
What do you see there?
I can't imagine the Giants being in a position of power in this one. You know, the offense, of course, is going to have issues. The Giants, oh, wait. I mean, you know, again, how do you take advantage of the Chargers' defense? You run the ball. Well, the Giants can't run the freaking football. They stink at it. So I don't know if they're going to really be able to benefit from that.
Yeah.
And now you got Jake Fromm passing the ball against the Chargers, who got, you know, good corners, good safeties, athletic middle linebackers, and a good pass rush. I mean, yeah. I don't like that. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, the Giants are smartly coached on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, to me, lack high-end talent. Have a lot of good, but there's no one great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's going to stop Justin Herbert and company in this showdown.
It feels like the kind of game, if they hit 21 or 24 points, they'd be in the Chargers.
It's over.
It's a win.
It's
right?
No doubt. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the game got away from the Giants in quite a hurry in this one, really.
And in one of the better games, and we'll visit this one here in a little bit, but the Bengals and the 49ers, quick peek at that one.
Yeah, well, you know, and we'll hit on some of this stuff
intriguing
with the 49ers.
Game.
It is an intriguing game. I do think Cincinnati matches up pretty well with the 49ers as far as, hey, the 49ers, we know their defense is good. You and I have talked before already. Like, yeah, they can stop the run, right? Their pass defense is good. Teams don't seem to want to attack their corners and just go, let's throw the ball outside. Seattle did that, and we're going to show that here in a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, some other teams who have been successful, whether it was Wentz or even the Packers, they did that. Wait, why are we letting them off the hook with these below-average corners out here? We got to take advantage of that. The Bengals, I don't know what the numbers were, Pete. I don't know if you got them by any chance as far as the Bengals outside the numbers, but my eye tells me through the season that if you give me 10-yard out, if you give 20-yard comebacks, Joe Burrow will throw them, and he threw it phenomenal last week, and I would expect that to continue even with the dislocated pinky.
So Pete has set me up for success here.
Yeah.
Burrow has the fourth most passing yards and passing touchdowns outside the numbers
this season,
but also the most interceptions
Ooh,
with eight.
Okay, all right.
They're taking risks.
Yeah, they're taking risks. They're not afraid. You know, again, and to me, their offense has just continued to expand as the year
it's
went
a fun
on.
Watch, isn't it?
It is a fun watch.
Yeah.
It really is. The last 3 weeks, I've really enjoyed watching them going, wait, here come – they have a zig for every zag without getting too technical. You know, like we showed like, hey, the post crosser, right? You know, that we showed like everybody runs the post and the crosser. Well, they'll run that play, but then a few plays later it'll be the guy stops the post and curls up over the ball like 25 yards downfield, and the guy who's supposed to run the crosser, he ran to like where the ball was and then came all the way back out. So they always give you like – You can't just play us to what you've seen. We're going to have something off of that, and I always think that's a huge part.
And for as dedicated as they are, for good reason, for pushing the ball downfield and taking advantage of Burrow and the receivers, they don't get away from the run game too much. I mean, Mixon, I think he had 19 carries, less than 3 yards per carry.
Yes.
So it wasn't working, but it shows they were committed to at least keeping that part of the rotation.
But ever since the bye week, I feel like they've been more committed to the run.
Right.
Here's the last thing I'll say, I think, about the Bengals that I just would like to see change a little bit. Because, you know, the Chargers, with some of their blitz zone change and their pass rush and all that, and we talked about the Bengals, they're not the best pass-protecting offensive line. I'd like to see them do a little max protect. Let our guys work down the field a little.
Mm.
Don't always make it all on Joe to move in the pocket perfectly and feel like, hey, I got to get this out somewhat on time, or I got to make a move and extend the play. You know, he gets hit a little too much for me still. And, yeah, keep a tight end in. Let Chase and Higgins and Boyd work downfield a little bit and do that. I'd love to see that aspect. That's the only little thing I'll say that's a little bit of a, I don't get why they don't do that more. But other than that, man, the Bengals offense is really good. And, hey, both these teams, you know, they're not out of it by any stretch of the imagination. And I still think the Bengals are going to be a playoff football team when all said and done.
So that's a good game coming up this weekend, Cincinnati-San Francisco. Bengals coming off a loss. 49ers also coming off a loss. And, you know, thinking about teams that are hard to predict, that, you know, you want to jump on and say, yes, that's what I thought they could be. And then they jump back and you're like, whoa, I'm not sure. It was kind of a whoa game against Seattle. Let's start with the Seahawks offense that had been just so poor, suddenly found its way, especially in key moments, against this Niners defense.
I think that's the key, the big thing. You know, again, the 49ers had the little disease again that we've talked about where, man, they want to mess things up. You know, whether it's, hey, you get a big turnover and then you get a safety, or, well, I throw a ball down the middle of the field 5 feet over the head of George Kittle, you know, on a first down. There's no reason. Or throw another first down interception where I run a play-action pass and just think, wait, it's been open all year. Let me just throw it. And Bobby Wagner, it hits him right in the belly button. So they do that. You know, some personal fouls. I mean, you know, it was a little bit of like, I thought the 49ers have gotten these out of their system the last few weeks, and it all came back again. And it's not that it was an overly pretty offensive showing from Seattle.
No, it wasn't.
But every time it was a gotta-have-it player moment,
there were a lot of those.
They won those.
Right.
And I think my big issue more than anything would be, and this is going to come up in another game we're going to talk about. You know, to me, the 49ers let the Seahawks off the hook with some of their defensive calls. That's what I would say. You got a struggling offense. Quarterback who's not playing his best. The offense itself has shown not the scheme to be able to get people open, right? To me, if I get in that type of game and I'm the head coach or anybody in charge of telling anybody, like, ooh, like, I would go, okay, let's you know, play good sound defense and make them prove to us they can execute and do offense.
Right.
Let's limit our times where we play one-on-one and let them off the hook and now just make it about their player versus our player. And Seattle's not scared to do that. They don't do it enough, in my opinion. And this game, they got back to it a little bit and took advantage of the below-average corners we talk about in San Francisco.
One of the ways to point out, I mean, what an aberration it was for Seattle to have that kind of success. They cleared 300 yards of total offense for the first time since Week 6. I mean, this isn't 25 years ago where 300 yards is great. I mean, that's kind of a base floor.
Well, and like, to that point, like, 300, yeah, you're right, 300 yards of offense in 2021 is jack diddly shit. No,
I don't know
what,
if you average 300, Pete, what's that get you right now?
Yeah, I'll tell you where you are. I mean, if you're averaging 300 a game, you are 30th in football, 29th in football, like, whoop-dee-doo. And let me just throw even more to that. 75 of those are on a fake punt that ran for a touchdown. That goes in the offensive stat book.
Wow.
Right. So it still ain't nothing special, but the 49ers continually gave them the ball in good field position.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they put a few ugly drives together, but even on some of the ugly drives, there's two roughing the passer penalties and, you know, just some stupid crap by the 49ers, who I think were still clearly the better team, but no Deebo Samuel, no Fred Warner, and – messing up of situational football, yeah, that's how you can lose a game on the road.
Two hugely important names there on both sides there for
hugely
the 49ers. Let's look at a couple examples here of the Seattle offense. If you want to focus on Seattle doing well or more on the Niners defense, have your pick here. But the first play here is Wilson, 33 yards to Metcalf. Second quarter, a little over 6 minutes left, and Seahawks down 17-7.
Well, third and 14, you got a pretty good pass rush in San Francisco. You got a good pass rush.
Third and 14, any team should expect to win defensively 80% of the time.
Probably higher than
maybe
that.
Maybe even higher.
You're right. It'd probably be 87, 88% of the time,
yeah.
I would think. And then against an offense that you just said hasn't had 300 yards since week six, Russell Wilson's been all over the place throwing the football.
Yes.
It's affecting his decision-making. I mean, to me, why are we playing this aggressive man-to-man defense on third and 14? I mean, are we just – is it playing it just to not let them get a field goal and not get them a cheap 5 yards?
They're on the plus 37.
I mean, that's the only logic I can even come with. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to put my rookie corner on the freakiest guy in football, bump and run on third and 14. I mean, Russell Wilson probably saw this and he was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. I'm in the shotgun and they're playing bump and I don't really have to rely on my Shane Waldron offense or anything. I'm just going to be able to throw to a guy and I'm the best, one of the best deep ball throwers of the last 10 years in football.
Right.
And that's what I don't understand.
What are the safeties doing? Because can't see him here in the
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, no, it's totally single safety man coverage here. All right. So it's let me just make sure I got this right. All right. So you safeties, okay, it's man-to-man across the board. It's him here, it's him here, it's him here, right? There's two safeties back here. You know, one's going to go down, the other one's going to go deep. Again, the robber, the rat coverage, whatever. They're obviously thinking something's going to come across the middle of the field. But either way, they're rolling the dice with big DK Metcalf right here, one-on-one with a rookie corner, all right, from Oregon. And as you see there, boom, there's your robber safety in the middle of the field. And as we just keep rolling the tape, there's the deep safety in Jimmy Ward, who are stuck in the middle. They're not going to get there in time for this. They're not. And Russell Wilson, he does a good job of keeping his eyes down the field before he throws over there.
He did a great job of looking left.
So where you can't
right,
get
yeah.
there. Right. He knows he's going there the whole time. Watch Russell's eyes. He looks a little left.
Yep.
Right? And he's just trying to keep that safety in the middle of the field so he can make this throw right there. It's not bad coverage. Again, I'm not really mad at the player.
But on third and long, when a defense plays an aggressive man with a tight corner, the quarterback, whether he's young or old, is thinking, oh, I've got a chance here. Whereas if it's some kind of confusing zone, you're thinking, okay, I'm just going to dump it off and play for the field goal. But yeah. A man gives the quarterback a chance to think, maybe we'll get this third and 14.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't get it.
It takes the thinking away. It takes the pressure off the offensive coordinator. You know, for a struggling offense, to me, this is like you're saying, hey, like, get some confidence, guys.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Russell loved this.
Yeah.
And again, as the game goes on, I mean, almost all the big pass plays have this in common. Almost
yeah.
all of them.
And his body language, if you know from watching the last 10 years, what you just said, the line of scrimmage is probably like, oh, wow, this is awesome. His conviction with every part of this play
right.
is so strong.
Look to the left, just came back firing, almost like barely even had a look. Goes,
yeah.
I know where I'm going. Let me let it loose.
It's like, I'm down 0-2 in the
yeah.
count. You're going
right.
to throw me a fastball down the middle?
No doubt about
okay.
it.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is.
Thanks.
That's exactly what it is.
I will take that. Okay.
Yeah.
Third quarter now, late in the third quarter. Another third down, more manageable, third down and 6. This will be a 12-yard touchdown to lock it.
Yeah, I mean, again, same thing, third and 6. You know, to me, I'm just playing like, let's just keep him to a field goal. You know, the same thing. I mean, the Hawks can't run. They don't protect well. You know, I wrote, you know, they're almost like the Steelers. They just want to get one-on-one and play shots. That's how they want to play, like Big Ben. You know, and then it's, of all games, you've heard me this year, like, yeah, the 49ers play a lot of zone and cover 4, and they're Seattle 3 and all that, where I go, oh, I wish they would play a little bit more man-to-man at times. This was the game we decided to do it? I would have gone, no, just stick with what you've always done this game. Don't change it now, not against this team. And it's, again, this is nothing special. It's nothing special at all. But it's the same coverage, all right? It's the same coverage here. It's the same thing we saw. He's coming down to the middle to look for somebody in the middle. They got a safety back here, and you got your 3 1-on-1s. And I believe the mug here, the mugging linebacker, is just watching Travis Homer in the backfield. You know, he's just there to eat some space so the center can't go. All right? And I might even be wrong. Maybe Hufanga here is actually down here to cover him if he does get out. I could be wrong. It could be wrong. It could be that. It could be that or Robert. I'm not really sure. Either way, there you go.
Pretty. Wow.
Beautiful throw.
Yeah.
Not horrible coverage. Look at the move Lockett puts on Josh Norman at the line of scrimmage. I mean, to me, again, this would be, if I was talking to the 49ers, I go, man, the only way you're going to lose this game is if you give Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, and Metcalf one-on-one opportunities. And like I said, almost every big pass play in the game came against man-to-man coverage. Boom, touchdown, gives them 30 points, and it's game over. I mean, it's game over because the 49ers can't score again after this and don't even get close until that last drive of the game where the batted pass on fourth down.
He's not what he was or where he wants to be, but those are a couple of really key, not perfect, but strong, deeper type throws for Russell Wilson in big moments.
No doubt about it. They really were. I mean, he definitely threw the ball better, okay? There's no doubt about that. And I think I am wrong. It is Hufanga's down there to cover the back out of the backfield. And if the back doesn't do anything, then he gets to play rat in the middle of the field there. But either way, it ends up one-on-one outside, and you can see the beautiful throw and catch.
All right, other side, Niners offense against the Seahawks defense. We're going to focus on the quarterback spot. Taking us down this lane is Corey Joskowitz. He says, I think the 49ers will have a tough time advancing with a loss like that. Do you start playing Trey Lance?
No.
First of
yet.
All, they're 6-6. I mean, there's a million teams within one game of 500, one way or the other.
Right.
Niners are one of those teams at 500, and Trey Lance may be the future, but, I mean, somebody needs to sell me or point out how he would be the better path to being around in January right now.
Yeah, of course not. And, I mean, you look at their schedule. All right, Cincinnati this week at Cincinnati. All right, coin flip game. I certainly could see the 49ers winning, right? It's coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
Week after that, it's the Falcons. Okay, then you got the Titans. Be a tough football game. But, I mean, they can match up with the Titans and beat them. You know, Houston. Right, the week after that. So right now we got two more wins, and even if we're not nice, we go two more losses, and we're 8-8. All right, and then you got the Rams, the last game of the year, where the 49ers have had the Rams number. Right, so I don't know. I mean, if they go 3-2 here down the stretch, and they're 9-8,
right,
man, that might get you in the playoffs this year.
It probably will.
Right,
and they kind of teased with those three wins in a row that they would be one of the upper echelon teams, and maybe they will be.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll get to January.
Right.
They'll figure out the next few games.
Yeah.
But really, if you back up a month, that they're in the same spot they were. Like, okay, they have a fighting chance to get in.
Yeah.
They're in that position right now.
Yeah. No, they're in that position. There's still a lot of talent on their football team. You know, I don't know. Maybe this is the team they are. I thought they got this out of their system a little bit. Kind of like I thought Kansas City got drops and dumb interceptions and things out of their system. But maybe we just need to come to terms this is what they are this year.
How much can you really evaluate that game? I mean, considering what Deebo Samuel had become in that offense, pass game and run game.
Killed them.
With him not out there.
Yeah, it killed that. No Fred Warner. I mean, both of those. The 49ers are very dependent on their stars. You know, they really are, maybe more than other teams, because their scheme is so based around them.
Mm.
And, yeah, Shanahan, they got back on the right track because of Deebo and his ability to be a weapon and use them in so many different ways that we've seen in the Shanahan era. When there's injuries, they have a hard time kind of figuring out ways to win football games. You know, he wants to use his stars as either a decoy or he's going to wear them out with creative game planning.
Yeah.
Deebo wasn't in this game. Guess who went off? George Kittle for 188 yards, right? So he went to that part of the playbook and said, let me fuck them over 95 ways with George Kittle here, right? So, it hurts them. They need that other extra weapon or arsenal in their offense because, yeah, Jimmy in the pass offense isn't great. It's not. They're not going to carry the team. It's good enough, and certainly good enough when you have all the other things working, the run game, the Deebo Samuel run game, all that working. Then, Jimmy, and you can be a damn good football team and play with anybody. But when they don't have that, yeah, as you saw, there's some moments of struggling. And the other thing I'll say, too, you know, One of the things I think was the theme of the weekend a little bit, it was a lot of divisional games.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing as I went back and watched film more and more, is just, you know, you always forget in divisional games, these teams know how to defend each other a little bit. They know some of the tricks of the trade. They know what these coaches like to do. Wait, I've been coaching against this guy for, you know, twice a year for the last 2 years. I know what he wants to go to. I know how he's trying to expose me. And they've tinkered throughout that process to find ways to, wait, Shanahan and the run game have gashed me. Let me find ways that I can't continue to live this way if we're going to play him twice a year. Seattle understands how to defend the Shanahan run game. They understand how to play the cutback lanes and the outside zone in that, to where that's why I think Seattle's had San Francisco's 40, the Niners number a little bit. And the fact that they can take away some of the go-to runs Shanahan usually delivers in most weeks, they take that away and they go, we're going to make something else beat us.
Yeah.
And that's where it always gets interesting and why we see, I think, you know, again, what is the Seahawks won four times in a row now against the 49ers?
Is that what it is?
I think it's four in a row or five out of the last six. It's something like
something
that.
Something on their side.
And it's because they have an understanding of that run game.
Unfortunate news coming out. I want to touch on this before we move on about the Seahawks defense. Jamal Adams is out for the year. We have a question from Mike in Elma. Is the signing of Jamal Adams a failure? Zero sacks this year, 9.5 sacks in 12 games last year. Seems like he got his money and the effort has been questionable. And what's not brought up there is the first-round picks they gave up to get him.
Yeah, sure.
So we take a look here at what he's done the last couple of seasons, considering the heavy price they got to get him. Back to the main points, would you call their acquisition of Adams a failure?
No, I will not. You know, first off, energy is never an issue with Jamal Adams. He's out there with his ass and hair on fire every week.
Mm-hmm.
He fits exactly what they want to do. They're not a great defense. Hey, has he made some mistakes, as I'll point out? But, you know, this is where I wish Pete could chime in. And I wanted to show some of these plays during the podcast. But, again, the last few podcasts, we've gone like 2 hours plus. So we're trying to limit the plays a little bit. But Pete will attest that I showed him a few plays this morning to go, listen, here, Jamal Adams' PFF grade's probably not that great this week. They ask him to do things. He is in the flaw spot of the defense almost always. Hey, we're going to put you in the one spot that if they dial up the right play, man, you better be fucking Superman or you're going to get fucked over. And you've heard me say that before, but I had some plays picked out to show you to go like, here he is covering George Kittle man-to-man, but he's also responsible for the C-gap.
Yeah.
And it's the 49ers who run at the C-gap better than anybody, and they fake a run right at the C-gap, and George Kittle comes out like he's blocking. And, of course, he's going, wait, this is a great running team. Let me fill the hole. Oh, wait, he snuck out and went out.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is not Jamal Adams' fault. That to me is you're putting a guy and expecting him to be Superman. He's still one of the most physically gifted safeties in football, but it does stink about his shoulder, and it's the second year in a row that he's dealing with this, and that makes me worry about a guy who, you know, is a car crash safety hitter.
Yeah, I think just as a fan, you know, whatever you think about the Seahawks or the Jets or that deal, he's fun to watch. The game's fun to watch when he's out there.
Yes, no doubt.
I think fans will miss watching him out there.
Pete, what would you say in my ear there? You said, right, PFF gave him the worst coverage grade. I showed Pete two plays where I'd go, what is he supposed to do? There was at least two plays where I'd go, what do they expect him to do?
Yeah.
He's not God or Superman or Bruce Banner. He's Jamal Adams. He's an awesome safety. But what they've asked him to do at times puts him in a position of like either he makes the most miraculous play ever or he's going to be in a highlight for getting beat by 20
yards. You describe Marlon Humphrey kind of the same way.
Exactly.
I know it's
right.
A corner against a safety, but he's the guy that, it's going to be a really difficult, tough time today. Good luck.
Yes, exactly right. We're going to do all these things because you're so great, and we're going to put you in a really tough spot. And, man, you know, you're going to lose your battles that way. It's absurd to think not.
Let's back up to the 49ers here, our friends at PointsBet helping us out. San Francisco at Cincinnati. We already talked about this game. The line is -1 there.
Okay. Yeah, so Bengals favored by one.
Bengals by one.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said it's a coin flip game, one to
that's
me.
That's right, you did.
It really is. It's a close one.
Over-under, 48.5 points.
Over-under, 48.5 points.
It's like I could see this game being like a 27-21
kind of thing pretty easily. 27-24, right around that range. Right. I mean, I wouldn't mess with the over-under.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to go with what you think is going to win this football game. Hey, as much as I like the balance of the Bengals, they can run the ball a little. They'll throw the ball outside on one-on-one coverage. But then I also go, they're not the best pass-protecting team like we talked about. You know, they're a little young there. Riley Reiff, I think he's still going to be hurt this week, right, Pete? I think. So you were, and the 49ers can rush the passer. So if for every, like, positive I look at one team, I go, well, there's a negative also here. And that's where I think it's going to be a fun game at 4:25 on Sunday afternoon.
You mentioned a lot of the games were divisional games last weekend. AFC North, Ravens, Steelers rarely disappoints. Always a fun watch. We're going to focus first on the Steelers' offense. Pittsburgh winning 20-19 in dramatic fashion. Steelers' first three quarters, the offense, kind of a lot of, Fourth quarter, much, much better.
Yeah.
We'll line it up here and see what Pittsburgh did there in the fourth quarter. I know Ben Roethlisberger was 9 out of 10. Kind of came alive and looked a lot better as the game went on. There we go. First three quarters, not so much, only 3 points. Fourth quarter alone, they had 17 points. They had more total yards in the last quarter than they did in quarters 1, 2, and 3. And total yards allowed, looking at the other side, the defense was also much better. But offensively, Ben Roethlisberger, I know he's not nearly what he was, but in that fourth quarter, pretty damn good.
Pretty damn good, definitely. It's hard to argue it. I mean, it is. I mean, he played good. Now, what I would get into is a little bit what we just talked about with the 49ers and the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You got a struggling offense. Anybody who's been listening to my podcast this year, you've heard it. I mean, Big Ben and that offense, they can only make plays when it's man-to-man coverage, and it's Claypool or Deontay Johnson one-on-one. That's the only time. The offense never delivers. You can't trust Big Ben to read things out and make the proper read, you know, and sit in the pocket and do all of that. So, you know, the offense not great, Big Ben not playing great, not reading coverage is great. Why would you just take that away and go, let me just make it a one-on-one game?
Right.
And that's what bothered me about the Ravens in the fourth quarter. You know, same with the 49ers. Like, why we have to be so aggressive here? What? Why? And that's, to me, where the Ravens dropped the ball. As awesome as I think Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, is, that would be just my critique of, like, went for the jugular a few times where I want to go, why? You don't need to go for the jugular. Another cut on the leg here is going to hurt this guy a lot, and they're in trouble. We don't need to cut the neck off and the head off right here.
The Ravens blitzed 40% of the time, and it used to be, like, way back when I was playing, blitz meant, of course you're playing man, but you can blitz now and still be kind of conservative and confusing on the back end, too.
Yeah, definitely.
You don't 100%. Have to play man.
No, you don't have to play man. You know, a lot of the best teams are playing blitz and some creative zone coverages behind it.
That's when they're at their best.
Yes. You have to, the quarterback's going, wait, what the hell is this coverage? I'm not sure what I'm reading. Oh, wait, I forgot they blitzed. Oh, I got hit. Like, that's what you want to do in those situations. They, unfortunately, get into too much right now of they blitz and they all-out blitz with, like, no safety in the middle of the field, and they make it a one-on-one game.
Yeah.
And we've seen teams that understand it or have a quarterback or a system that can, you know, have answers to that.
Sure.
Has, you know, exposed them a little bit, whether it was the Raiders week one, the Bengals in that game when they beat them, and, of course, this one, again, another divisional matchup where they know the rules of certain things they do, and they use it against the Ravens.
We showed the graphic of all the success Pittsburgh had in the fourth quarter compared to the start of the game or the first three quarters. I mentioned Ben Roethlisberger, 9 out of 10, a couple of touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So let's focus on that final quarter here with the three plays we look at, beginning with Roethlisberger, 40 yards to Chase Claypool on a third down and one situation. This is early fourth, 14:35 in the game, and Pittsburgh down 10-3.
Yeah, I mean, first off, it's 7-3 at the half. They played somewhat vanilla the whole first half, and Pittsburgh couldn't do anything. They played somewhat vanilla the whole third quarter. Pittsburgh couldn't do anything. Couldn't do anything. Like, so why not continue to
keep doing it?
You're not a they're not a great pass protecting team, you know, as far as Pittsburgh's concerned. You know, they're not a great run team. You got a pretty good run stopping defense. You got some big guys there. Like, why are we going for it's the third and one and we got to make sure they lose 5 yards defense? That's where I would just question it. And here, I mean, look at this. And again, these aren't my drawings. I can't remember. Is this a Tony Romo?
This is
Tony
Jim
Romo.
Tony.
Yeah, writing on the board here. But yeah, he sees the plays going. Hey, this is a play Pittsburgh used to do with Antonio Brown. You know, it's a cheap way to get explosive plays on short yarded situations. When you think, oh, everyone wants to stop the run.
And it is a run formation.
It's a run formation, right? The bunch. The Steelers like to just double team, do stuff like this, and let him just kind of find a gap and smash it in there. Now, where I want to say is, like, okay, first off, you've been stopping the run with normal defenses all game long. So why do we have to commit, you know, everybody at the line of scrimmage? Patrick Queen's going to blitz, you know, and do a run blitz here. Why do we have to do it this way, okay? And here you go. I mean, you got Marlon Humphrey off the edge. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys blitzing. And then you got really 8. Because Chuck Clark's going to get up in there too. And now you just have two one-on-one matchups with Anthony Everett. And I think that might be Jimmy Smith, the other guy. Oh, no, it's not Jimmy Smith. That's it's 21. 21's a young guy. I forget his name. But either way, it's Jimmy Smith up here one-on-one. And they're going to do exactly what you see, slant and deep cross. Well, if you protect it, Brandon Stevens is 21. Thank you. Either way, okay, if you protect it, you're going to have a shot to strike down the field. And you could see here, first off, when you blitz this many guys right between the tackles, guys end up in the same gaps. They have more blitzers than they blockers, but it doesn't matter. Because of the way they blitz and smash it in there, you could see you got some guys being blocked by two guys being blocked by one guy. The numbers are in their favor, all right? But either way, as you'll see, and it goes, I mean, Anthony Everett has no chance here. He has no chance. He has to play a little outside leverage in case they ran some toss. He's the outside gap defender, so he's got to be out there. And now it's a little run fake. Claypool takes the inside release and gets on the inside edge, and the play's over right there. I mean, the play's over. Claypool's 6'4 and runs 4'3. It's over. He's got to step on the guy. Anthony Everett's really fast too, but Not as fast or the same fast as Chase Claypool. And here we go. I mean, Steelers offense couldn't do anything.
Right.
And now you've given them a little momentum to, you know, feel like they're doing okay. Hold on. It's my wire. You good? I'm back. Yes, this thing's not screwed in. We got to screw wires in for them to work. So that's not screwed in. Here we go. Everybody got me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Here we go. Screw you, wire. All right, so there's that.
Right. That's a 3rd-and-1 conversion, big play, momentum, leading to this on the very next play.
The very next play. Like, again, they've done nothing. You're up 7. Like, why? They're going to dial up an all-out blitz again. An all-out blitz. And this is one where, you know, I'm going to just go right to the all 22 here so we could watch it, all right? Because we got that right after this. All right, so you see it's all out there, and it's going to be the touchdown. But this is what I want to get to right here. You know, again, this is a game plan play. They must have felt comfortable about, you know, wait, we got the old 4-cross look a little bit here. That whenever you see that, and I know this guy's down here in a bump, but when you see that, you got to think something's up. And Baltimore's going to bring the pressure. Guys off the edge, 6-man pressure. And Big Ben does a great job of kind of making Chuck Clark freeze with his pump fake right here because he's free coming off the edge. But I think he knows what he's got down the field. He just wants to buy himself 1 or 2 seconds. And within this, okay, they're not switching these off. Right, so you got here Deontay Johnson post and McLeod running the like corner route, and they don't switch him off. They play to where, no, you got him on the out route, and you got him on the in route no matter what. So you guys better not run into each other. Okay, well, there you go. Here comes the all-out blitz, and Big Ben does a good job on Chuck Clark just to make him jump because he's trying to protect Freiermuth in the flat, but you can see.
Was there anybody more open all weekend than that?
No.
I mean, it's not
and,
even
and as
close.
You watch, they run into each other right here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter that they run into each other. The play's already over. There's no safety. He releases inside. What do you want Anthony Everett to do?
And that it's the same thing of the last play in the sense that half a second off the ball, the play's over.
Because it's over.
The receiver gets to the inside.
And he can run 4-3-2. And there's no safety in the middle of the field.
It's not even close.
There's nothing you can do. And I'm sure Anthony Everett got a bad PFF recovery covering grade because of these two plays. And I want to go, Deion Sanders would have got beat on these two plays. This is not fair.
Right.
It's not fair. And to me, just not the smartest of moments by the Baltimore defense there. You know, to me, you're letting a below-average offense off the hook by doing that stuff. So what if they kick the field goal?
Right.
Right. They got to keep making them kick field goals.
Okay, so now late fourth quarter, 1:52 left. Pittsburgh down 13-12, and they're inside the Ravens 10.
They're inside the Ravens 10, and I'll just say, too, there's two or three plays that were also man-to-man that led to this and led to the field goal drive before this to let them go up or make it 13-12. So I'm just trying to give everybody, again, a synopsis of what happened here. But – okay, big pass play. Baltimore. Like, okay, they're on the 5-yard line. Who can't concede the I don't understand the aggressive, like, what's the aggressive all-out play going to really do for them?
I mean, you get a sack, it's still a chip shot field
exactly.
goal.
Exactly. What's the point? Like, to me, the risk is not worth the reward.
Yeah.
Right?
Like my wife says to me, to what end?
To what end? Like, what? Oh, well, you made them kick a 7-yard more deeper field goal.
Yeah.
Oh, it went from 22 to 28 yards.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't know if they'll be able to make it. I mean, to me, that's where I don't understand the logic here. And, you know, again, it's an all-out blitz look. It's the Baltimore Ravens, Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you think Pittsburgh doesn't understand some of the rules?
And like the word bubble above Ben Roethlisberger right now would be the same as we saw with Russell Wilson earlier.
He's going,
like,
thank God.
Oh, good.
Thank God.
Now I've got a real fighting chance.
I don't. All I got to do is find my one guy I want on a matchup, and we're good. Or
right.
We'll have some route combination to screw them over, like we just saw in the last play,
yeah.
Where we cross them up. Well, this one, you know what they're going to do? They're going to fake the cross, and Baltimore, of course, is worried about the cross because mm-hmm. they've been beat by it.
Love that play.
So they're going to fake it,
yeah.
And they're going to get burned by it because the guy's going to put the brakes on and stop back out. But also, here's my other thing to this. Like, 13-12, you're conceding the field goal already. Just don't let it be a touchdown. Now, okay, great, it's 15-13. All Lamar has to do is drive the ball 40 yards for the greatest field goal kicker in the history of football to get him in range,
yeah.
And you're going to win the game.
Right.
But instead, they change it to where we need a touchdown to tie the game, 2-point conversion to win it. That to me, you know, not only am I, you know, again, I really respect the Ravens, so I don't want to ever, like, I'm not trying to disrespect their coaches. I'm not.
You can respect them and think that they're really good and also point out over a 17-game
this one,
season.
This one just didn't make sense this week.
Times where it didn't work.
This week, it just didn't make sense
that's
to me.
That's more than fair.
And that's to me where it's like, I don't know why, like, why doesn't John Harbaugh just go, hey, you know, drop. Let's play coverage. Let's just let them kick the field goal. Let's rush three. We've seen Big Ben all year long when he holds the ball and starts pumping it. He'll throw the ball to the other team.
Yeah.
For sure.
Let's see it.
Right. So here we go. You know, and here it is. We got Max Protect because they are playing the Ravens and they know them. So they're going, yeah, this team, they're going to blitz everybody. So you got 5-6-man protection. He's staying in. All right. What they do is run the other tight end out here. Like, he looks like he might run some sort of out route or something like that. But what he's really trying to do is just go this way to make sure Marlon Humphrey goes over the top. And Deontay Johnson's going to come underneath. So Marlon Humphrey's worried about, damn, if he runs anything like that coming underneath, I got to get him because we don't switch off in this coverage. So I got to get over there and be Superman, Bruce Banner, and who's the other guy I said before? God. You got to be him. All in one thing here, right? And as you see, watch how it plays out. I mean, here it is. Oh, he gets over the top. Great. I'm going back out. You're screwed. It's a touchdown. As long as Big Ben can hit the throw. And he hits it. And unfortunate, that's where Marlon Humphrey tears his pectoral and ends up being done for the year. But, again, it's again into a division. We kind of know what you're going to do. We're ready for it. And I just don't understand the over-aggressive thought by like I said, a really well-coached Ravens defense
right.
that I just think like went for the kill a little too much in this game, and I don't understand that.
Now, Pittsburgh has won 5 out of 7, looked like a team that could be around in January playing a little bit. We've talked about Roethlisberger and the receivers quite a bit. Let's turn our focus to the offensive line, and this is from Richard Baggins. He said, why does the Steelers' O-line look lost at times, but on Sunday, once they switch schemes to a more man-up blocking approach, they improve greatly? Is it Big Ben making the calls at the line, or is it something else?
No, I think it's they do get away from their man-blocking stuff too much. I think it's a great question by Richard Baggins. It really is. It's not a great O-line. We know that. I don't think they're made for inside or outside zone because they're not great athletes. But when we've had other Wednesdays and showed their off, we showed, I think, like them against Denver earlier this year.
Yeah.
You know, they're at their best to me when they do pull a lineman or they do what I, you know, 34, 35 double, where they try to get, you know, a double on the nose tackle and one guy goes up to the linebacker. A double on the other tackle and another guy goes up to try to find a second level guy. And then they just let Najee Harris get the ball and come downhill, and he's got great vision and change of direction skills to where he can just find the hole and do that. That's what they got going a little bit in the third and fourth quarter to get some positive stuff in the run game. Again, it wasn't special, as you can see by the numbers. I mean, it wasn't a great day running for them, but that gave them a little bit something as far as momentum, chewing up the clock. And the other thing, too, I think is, you know, Baltimore has a little bit of the problem Pittsburgh does is they don't have a lot of depth on their front seven. So they started, I think, just started to wear Baltimore's front out a little bit as the game went on there, too, to where that got them some 4 and 6 yard runs in late in the third and fourth quarter that gave them some positive plays.
Other side, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Struggled, you know, by his own standards.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't what he expected. Why did he struggle, particularly against the blitz? Why do you think Baltimore had issues dealing with the blitz at Pittsburgh? You can see in the dropbacks, no blitz 28 times against the blitz 19 times. And just you know, seemed to have an issue with the pressure.
It's we talked about this, I think, the Bengals game. Remember at home earlier this year? I believe it was you with me. The Bengals game. Of course, we've talked about the Dolphins Thursday night game.
Right.
They don't have a great understanding of how to beat the blitz. One, I don't think their plan to beat it is that great offensively. And two, you know, Lamar at times, I don't know if he's doing necessarily the right thing either. So it's a little bit of like two things meeting it ahead to, wow, I mean, that's shouldn't be having some of these negative plays that they have against the blitz.
But
and I think teams see that. So they keep going to it. They keep going. You know, I don't know if Lamar knows what he's doing or if he's just relying on his legs to get him out of trouble. And I'm not sure necessarily if Greg Roman has a lot of answers either. So nobody's scared to kind of, you know, push the envelope a little bit on these blitzes.
He certainly didn't have an answer for T.J. Watt.
No.
On that day. And a lot of people haven't.
No, they don't.
Leads the league in sacks,
phenomenal.
But I mean, he had a day.
That and then the fact of, like, you know, blitzing and Lamar's got nobody open or not knowing where to go. And he runs or holds the ball too long. And he fell into T.J. Watt's lap, I think, two different times,
It happened more than once.
Yeah, but, yes, it just was an underwhelming effort by Lamar and the offense. I put it on both. I look at Lamar in this game and go, we're going to show some plays where he missed it. I wanted to show some other plays to go also, like, see, the offense isn't great either. They don't always deliver for him.
When you say the offense around Lamar, are you talking about the other 10 guys out there, or are you talking about the plan?
The plan itself and the other 10 guys out there. You know, their offensive line is not at full strength. They got backup running backs. They got third and fourth string running backs playing starting running back for them.
And that's been kind of the theme all season.
It's the theme.
It's not new.
You know, they never can consistently run the ball throughout a game. They're the most misleading top five running team in the history of football.
Because of Lamar.
Yeah. Exactly right. A few game plan designed runs by him and a scramble for 40 yards, and you've rushed for 100 yards in a game. And you go, whoa, they're a great running team. And I'm going to go, not when they hand the ball off to the running back. I mean, again, they fall apart after the first drive, the first 15, where they have a few little, you know, wrinkles or the defense is getting used to how to play the Ravens. And after that, it becomes non-existent. So I think all of it kind of plays together. And, Lamar did not play his best, but like I said, the offense, and there was a few plays I wanted to show here, but we didn't have great angles of the coverage on, like, the TV cuts and stuff to go, like, look, here, he's trying to throw to this guy, but they got four guys around it. And that's not helping, let alone he's not helping himself, too.
We do have a number of plays here, I think four.
Yeah.
Let's start out halfway through the first quarter, third down and six. I think Lamar's going to get picked here.
Well, you know, again, maybe the biggest play of the game, really, when you look back at it, it's an all-out blitz look. You know, it's five on five and five guys covering five guys, and you got six pass rushers against five blockers. That's all it is. And, you know, again, this has reared its ugly head in Baltimore a lot. And what I don't understand here, and you know, and basically what we're going to do here is you're going to have Andrews running the post down the middle and Hollywood Brown on a shallow cross, okay, against this blitz. And you're going to see, first off, I don't know why his eyes go over there. You can see, and I mean that with like, what's over here that's going to be the answer? He's running. If you throw the ball to him, he's going to get hit, right? You know, the route up top, you know, again, you can see the route at the top of the screen. He's playing inside leverage. It's an all-out blitz, so if he stops or do anything, he's going to be ready to jump it. He's thinking the ball's got to come out quick, okay? So there's really no answers. I don't understand why he's looking over there. Here comes T.J. Watt. I understand that. But what I really want to show everybody is, like, here. I mean, this is why this guy's running this route. It's for this right here. You know, on this specific play, hey, posts down the middle are good against all-out blitz, but not the way they switch-release this. It doesn't work out quite the same. And this play, shallow cross versus all-out blitz, I can guarantee you since training camp, they told you, hey, you get hot, look for your shallow cross, get the ball out of your hand. All right? For some reason, he never really gets his eyes to Hollywood Brown. Now he sees T.J. Watt bearing down on him, and he tries to make a miss, and it just makes a horrible decision.
Yeah,
horrible. Horrible. And, you know, and in games like this,
you just threw it up for grabs. I mean, it's scoreless in the first quarter.
It's the first drive of the game.
If you ground it, you can kick a field goal.
Kick a field goal against a team that we know is struggling on offense. You know,
through a Hail Mary.
Goals. I just threw a Hail Mary. Exactly right. So, you know, that of course was a chance for Baltimore to get up, get some momentum, you know, add a few more points on the board, and just a really bad play by Lamar Jackson. Definitely his worst play of the day.
For sure. And it came early and would be costly later on.
Yep.
All right. How about not a Lamar interception, but a Lamar incompletion. Third quarter now halfway through, third down and four. Once again, in Pittsburgh, you know, inside the Pittsburgh 20-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, again, here we go. We got quarters coverage, all right? It's quarters, it's third and four, boom, 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 okay? It's going to be over here. All right, let me just make sure. I want to make sure they don't. All right, so it's quarters, and it's quarters carry, all right? Sorry. So he's going to carry him up the seam. This guy is going to carry the receiver up the seam. But ultimately, what this play is the exact call for this defense. It's exactly what you wanted. So with all that I just talked about, hitch, go, clear that guy out. None of these guys can get in the way. You're going to create a one-on-one with Devin Bush and your number one passing target in Mark Andrews. They're going to run a jerk route. This is what you want. This is why you call the play, all right? And here you go. I mean, here we are now, see? So you got a good feel for everything we got, right? It's quarters across the board. There's nothing. He's carrying this guy just in case he tries to run a beater. They're not going to let you run the little, you know, seam vertical beater and cross the face of the safeties and give an issue there. So here you go. You got one-on-one. He's going to run a little stutter and then come across. He runs a jerk route. We call it a jerk route because you're supposed to make this guy look like a jerk, all right? And it's because you can do sit down and curl up. You can fake that way and break back out. You can fake out and go back across. He gives a little stutter, and he's open. I mean, again, this is the NFL. That's open. It's a first down. Throw it on him.
Didn't even look at him, though.
Thank you. Yeah. That's exactly what I don't understand. Like, He looks at him like right. I don't know if he looks at him there or not. I don't know what he's looking at here. It almost looks like he was looking at this guy thinking, I might get that down the middle of the field.
If he really was looking at Andrews, he would have liked what he saw.
Right. I don't know why. You're exactly right. So there he is. Eyes here. Never gives him a chance. All right. And boom. throws it out here to a guy who has nothing to worry about as far as Akilah Witherspoon other than this guy, because this guy is basically doubled. So he's not worried about him at all. Not at all. It's him. And watch. When he throws, I want everybody to watch too. So this is just, if you want to throw this ball, you take, get the ball, set hut, take a drop, and you go right to it, right? You don't go, let me look somewhere else, and then go late over in the flat to my running back first at corner. That's not, that's a recipe for disaster. But what I want everybody to watch here is watch. I love Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews, his body language here. Because he's going, wait, this ball is coming to me. I'm going to get the first down. Everybody watch him right here in the middle of the screen when the ball doesn't go his way. Watch. Puts his arm, gives it the old head. I wish you could continue to see it on coach's film. And if you put me back on camera, I mean, the ball goes incomplete. He turns around and he's like,
it's like, this is why they pay
this
me.
This is why I'm one of the highest paid tight ends of football. It's right me here. On Devin Bush.
And I did my job.
I did his job.
I got open.
And again, leaves an opportunity for them to get the first down, maybe score a touchdown, and put a not good Pittsburgh offense in an uncomfortable position.
Let's go later, third quarter, 1 minute left. It's now Ravens up 10-3. This is third down and 10.
Third down and 10, all right. It's a little bit similar to what we talk about on the first play, all right. It's all out. Once again, all out. Again, and what we've learned from all out the last few weeks, right? When you start to see this look as a quarterback right there, the old picket fence, you know, like, wait, something's up. Something's up. And, of course, you see, here's the other seven guys at the line of scrimmage.
All coming.
They're all coming. And, you know, sometimes when you do these seven guys, like we talked about before, guys end up in the same gap to where even though there's only six blockers, they kind of eat each other up. And you'll see here, he's got great pass protection. He's got great pass protection. And within that, this is how they're covering this. This is what it's also a – it's a good disguise, but you should know this as a quarterback what this means right here. But what they're really doing here, let me just make sure I got it right. It's man there, Minka's man here on Mark Andrews, and Edmonds is actually covering this guy. All right? Yes. So there's a little knowledge of them obviously going, wait, I think they're going to come across the field. All right? One.
He's 20 yards away from
him. He's 20 yards away. But his eyes, if you can see him, they're right over there. And it's hard to really see on this cut again, but you can see he's going over there. All right? Did you see him in the cover, the corner of your eye? Right? He's going over there, and he's going to end up going down on a little bit over towards him to cut him off in the shallow cross. Now, there's two things here. One, like, why are we leaving the pocket? That's the first thing I want to say. Pocket's good. Like, you want to fade away a little bit or do something like that? Sure. But why run out to the right? And the other thing is, like, he has inside leverage on Minka Fitzpatrick. With this safety who comes down, and, you know, you just got to trust me or go watch coach's film on NFL Game Pass. Trust me, he's here. He's going to break across Minka's face on the post route, and if he just fades away like we talked about or just stays on his back foot, you could just throw the ball up, and you're going to get a big play. And instead, he leaves the pocket too early. You know, now he's trying to make something happen. He actually almost gets a completion here, unbelievably. Oh, but here we go. I forgot we had this angle. All right? So now you don't have to believe me. You can just see it for yourself. Here we go. Look. See what I mean? He's here. Pocket's still clean. Just hang in there, and you're going to be able to throw this. Look, you don't have to worry about him because his bright lights are all over that guy.
Is he open.
I know. So that's what I mean. Look. And this is what this route's for. Again, I've been coached by too many people, whether it's Josh McDaniels or John Gruden, whoever. This is what that route is there for. You want to be able to, okay, the pocket's good. Cut to me on camera if you can. Pocket's good. All right, I know they're coming. It's an all-out blitz. Boom. Just throw it up. Like, that's right. All you got to do. Yeah. That's all you
got
to do.
You know what got him? Is that feeling as a quarterback, they're bringing seven. I'm sure I'm going to have to run away
from it, right? I think so. I think you just, at times, you get that, and you predetermine and think, they're not going to be able to protect me here. You know, but he looks at the rush and looks like he has, like, he sees, like, nobody's there. I mean, I don't know. I'm surprised he left so early.
But you're right. He is so open. He being Andrews, you could back up and flick it 50 yards and just, you know, get it out there.
Exactly,
he could run
right.
It. It doesn't have to be a perfect pass.
Yes.
It just has to be thrown.
That's right. It's like Derek Carr did it to the Ravens week one, I think two different times.
Yep.
It's the same type of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
On this field.
It was at home in Vegas. But Derek Carr
he did
threw a
Pittsburgh.
Deep post against the Steelers,
yeah.
too. You're right. But it wasn't against All Out.
Okay.
You're right. But we did. We talked about that play.
Yeah.
Good memory by you for a 50-year-old. But yeah. But this to me, they're going to continue to see this because they just seem to screw it up every week.
Especially if that's the response. They're
exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to go, wait, I don't know about their answers, and I don't know if Lamar really recognizes what's going on.
And I think we have the final play of the game, the two-point conversion. It's 20-19. Yeah, there it is.
20-19.
Oh, it was a great call. Almost.
Great
almost
call.
Went the Ravens' way.
Great call. Great call. And to add to it, hey, of course T.J. Watt makes things ugly and tough here, right? It's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 coming, all right? It's man, 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 man. Now, Pittsburgh's smart. They're not going to do like what Seattle does to Jamal Adams and always put their guys in like just an unwinnable position, right? So within this, right, he's going to give it a little run fake, all right? Andrews is going to come out the back door here like this, right? Well, Pittsburgh's too well coached on defense to go, that's realistic to ask this guy to go over there and cover him. Because, of course, if they run anything like this, right, he's going to get picked, and it's going to be a slam dunk completion. So what they do is they have a call, and it ends up being, if this guy crosses the formation, Devin Bush is the one that's going to be responsible for getting him. Now, he messes up. He doesn't get it, and that's why you're going to see Mark Andrews wide open, all right? But you'll see the reaction after to show you. You know, yeah, he's worried about the run. You get that, right? So, boom. And this is the guy that makes the play because he didn't bite on the run fake at all. And he knows he doesn't have to because he probably knows we got the blitz front side. I'm just going to let those guys run after the running back. I'm going to take Lamar unless they do some quarterback play or quarterback run. And that pressure, of course, look, I mean, Lamar's not expecting. He's like, oh, my gosh, gets the ball, just misses the throw. I mean, just misses it. And look, here we got Devin Bush running, right? And I hope we can see it on here because Edmonds turns around and Bush is like, oh, gosh, because they talk like, dude, that was you.
Yeah.
And, you know, Devin Bush is a little bit like, thank you for saving my ass. Holy crap, I almost became the bad guy. But, yes, you know, all in all, it was his job to see this guy come across, and he's got to be in the flat because, again, you can't realistically ask him to cover across the field like that. And missed opportunity by the Ravens, you know, again.
And
it's a big win for the Steelers.
I think Watt had 3.5 sacks, a tangible part of what he did. He didn't pick up any numbers there, but he altered that throw just enough.
Right, to where screw stats.
They didn't get those two
screw
points,
the
right?
Screw stats, yes. That's a fuck the play up stat right there.
There you go.
That's what that is.
The most important play
he got
of the game.
In the way. He's the reason the ball was off target.
Right.
Lamar had to get it off quicker than he wanted to. So great job by him.
It's that time. Yeah, do you have what I have?
Oh, I do have it. You ready?
Yeah,
here we go, baby. Here we go. I was like, it's that time? Is it play of the fucking day yet? Okay, but
almost,
here we go.
Almost.
It is the Under Armour read. And I'd just like to let everybody know, we are supported by Under Armour. Yeah, we're supported by it. You see the damn Under Armour thing here? Right, yeah, that's Under Armour right there. And I got the shoes
on.
You know it, and they match my logo. So we're supported by Under Armour, and just like us, Under Armour wants to give you an edge. They are focused on performing better and taking their game to the next level. Everything from running shoes that propel you forward to hoop shoes that give you insane grip. They even make hoodies that reflect energy. And I think I got one coming, as I said on Monday. I think
nice.
I got one coming. Yeah,
yeah.
I want to try it out. We're not just about the end result, winning or glory. Under Armour is about the hard work, the dedication, the cycle of training, competing, and recovering. We give you advantages, but not shortcuts. the only way is through.
I see you doing reads on Football Night in America, and I feel kind of like a proud dad because I think it started here.
It did start here.
The comfort and the confidence.
Now they ask me to do the points like, bet
Chris
read
can do it.
Stuff
yeah.
too. Yeah, no, yeah. I get nervous too. Still, but
my
I'm
favorite part
better.
Of the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
I give her a little fist pump at home. I'm like, all right, hon.
Now he did it.
Now I can help in the kitchen.
He did it. Yes, and I always have fun. Like you know, sometimes we rehearse some of these segments. And,
oh yeah.
And I always throw in a bunch of motherfuckers and this and that and have fun, right, and make Drew and company laugh. So I hope none of those slip out on Sunday.
That would be an even bigger fist bump if that happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd be fist bumping my way off the show if that happened. So.
All right. Play of the fucking day. Are you ready?
Yeah.
We have multiple.
Multiple
plays.
That was one of them, that end of the game play right there. Yeah, that was a great play.
It was kind of an appetizer
yeah,
for it.
Right.
Okay, so Patriots.
Yeah.
Running the hell
Ooh,
out of the ball.
Baby.
New definition to
yeah.
running the hell out of the ball. But
right.
one play in particular here, Damian Harris, 64 yards to the house.
Yeah. Toss, crack. Hey, anybody, you guys have been watching Chris Sims Unbuttoned presented by Under Armour. We talked about this a few
yes.
weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots, the 49ers are the best toss, crack teams in all of football. They are. You know, they got great ways to stress you out with the outside run or the inside run. You know, just like we've talked about with San Francisco, you overplay one, they got an answer and go, okay, well, here comes this then. You're overplaying that. All right. So, you know, again, we got to be patient with me here. This is the Bills. They're not real big up front, all right? So within that, and their linebackers aren't real huge either, they try to create a little chaos in their run game, all right? And they want a movement, you know, a little controlled chaos, mess up the blocking scheme. You know, hopefully that can help us out for not being the biggest football team in the NFL. All right, so really what we got here, and I hope I get this right, you got, this is Lotulelei, I believe, I could be wrong. They're trying to do a little, like, slant here, slant with the defensive line. He's going to want to be responsible for this gap right here, okay? Ed Oliver is going to try to shoot over to be responsible for this gap. That's going to make Edmonds be responsible for that gap, Milano responsible for that gap. This guy's also slanting this way, which is going to make this guy be responsible for that gap. So does that make sense there?
Yes.
We're running the toss this way. You're going to get the block down by N'Keal Harry. You're going to get the pulling lineman around the edge, right? All of that, okay? But they're trying to create some advantages with their athleticism up front because they know they're not big enough. So basically where every defender is, the defensive lineman is leaving, the linebacker's got his back, right? Oh, yeah, you got there. I'm going back over to replace you there. Okay, you're going to this one, and I'm going to replace you right here down the middle. All right, the key to this play is this right here, Matt Milano. And this is tough. It's really tough sledding. I mean, this is ultimately his gap that shoots gets the touchdown, okay? But also when you've seen a team on film – run the toss crack and get outside and just burn everybody. What is that? I mean, it makes guys want to get out there and stop it. You know, you're not thinking about, wait, they're tossing it out there. Let me slow down because the guy might put on the brakes and cut back 10 yards the wrong way to hit an alley for the touchdown. It's tough. It really is. I mean, it's his fault, but I can't blame him a whole lot. But here, you see everybody slanting, right? You see that guy going there. Makes sense, everybody? I hope so. It made sense to me, all right? So as we go, there we go. We got the toss crack. You see the block down. Here's 53 replacing. You see Edmonds there. Now this is where it goes wrong, okay? I'm going to clear this one more time. Clear. It goes wrong right here. See, he's in his gap, Milano. He's in his gap. But he sees the toss, so he wants to get over there and get out there, right? Cross the face. Let me help out in case this thing hits up here so I can make a tackle. But what do we got working here? You see? So now he's worked so hard to get over the top, and they're getting so good at running this play, they know people are taking away this, the outside. He's patient and looks for the cutback lane. And look at Matt Milano. He's screwed. And that means touchdown, right? And again, it's his fault. I know that, but it is really tough to be that disciplined, to play that cutback lane
right.
on a toss action to the left side where you know they're very good and they get a lot of yards playing it this way. But at the same time, yes, he loses. It's his gap ultimately that, you know, gets exposed here. Now, like,
great read by Harris.
Great read.
Awesome.
You know, it goes into our, like, inside-outside zone talk, right, where you got to press the edge because it opens up those cutback lanes. And, hey, yeah, they'd like, you know, some backside pursuit to get there too, you know. And I think I'm wrong. This is Harrison Phillips. I think I said it was Lotulelei. Like, hey, can you get over there? Can somebody else get over there, Gregory Rousseau, to help out? You know, that's the other thing. But, yeah, they all get walled off. You can see. They get walled off by Brown, the extra lineman, Owoneyu, or the Michigan second-year guy, right? So there's that. And, boom, out the gate, he's gone. Exactly right. See, so basically what we're saying is he's got to stay here, all right? He's got to be over here. Don't worry about being so aggressive over the top. You got Micah Hyde who's going to be here to clean up the trash, right? So that's where it was used against him, them overplaying it, his recognition of the play. Matt Milano's a really good football player. It's a tough one to defend. And, of course, the Patriots, as we've shown, they have, like, six running plays, and they mastered them.
Yeah.
In every defensive front you can possibly go against.
Right.
And they always block it the right way, even when you try to slant or create chaos.
Crazy game to watch. Yeah. I looked up at one point. I'm sure a lot of people did the same thing. But the Patriots had run 42 plays, and 41 were run plays, only one pass.
It's crazy.
It was bad news for the Bills. It was a great moment for us here because this is important now. It's giving me the chance to redeem myself. I have a question here. You know who it's from?
Who's that? No. Oh.
Who would you guess? It's from Matthew Cole Webb, otherwise known as
Matt the W.
Matt the W.
Good old Matt the W.
He's back.
What is this, Matt the W?
He reached out to me on social media. He said, "Paul, by popular demand, I'm submitting my What the Fuck Happened directly to you. What the fuck happened with the entire Patriots offense versus the Bills? Two or three passes, 19 yards. They still won. Insanely badass. Thanks, Paul. Redemption time on pronouncing my name. Loves the pod. Still listens since day one, even though I butchered his name in famous fashion. Thank you, Matthew Cole Webb. Matt the W.
You the man, Matthew Cole Webb. Thanks for listening and being with us from day one. Seriously. Thanks for this guy. I can't even say your damn name right.
I think there were some like capital letters.
There was. I mean, in your defense.
In my defense.
It did look like you could make.
Like Matt Milano, I had reasons for making that mistake.
Yeah, sure. Right, sure.
Right?
Yes.
I think we have one more.
Yeah.
One more play.
Did he want me to answer a question there? You know? Well, you know, the Patriots, of course, are the greatest of managing situations in the history of football.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's better at that. Their run game is an advantage against it, like we talked about. It's why I picked them to win the game. Not that I, you know, was, you know, so confident, but it felt good because, like what I've said leading up to the game, the Bills are not big up front. You know, teams like the Colts, teams like the Tennessee Titans, when they had a, whoa, my gosh, we're going to get overpowered, we have to really commit to stopping the run, you know, it just becomes too much. It usually lends itself to some easy passes in the pass game. And that's where I go. At first I went, you know, the wind is more of a detriment to Buffalo, but as the game went on, I went, wow, with the fact that they're running the ball, if they could throw the ball they would gash Buffalo. Mm. I mean, Buffalo couldn't stop the run knowing they were going to run the ball and had 10 guys basically in the box.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
They still couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's because, again, they have checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're going to play the toss crack too aggressively? Well, of course, we're going to teach our running back to be patient. Or if you start playing it that way, we'll have some play where we'll trap the inside. And now that you're so worried about protecting the outside, we'll basically create a hole up the middle. So they have answers for everything for when you're overplaying it. That's what they do so special. And then, of course, their defense is special. I mean, again, I don't know where – is it third? They're third in football right now. It's the best defense in football. I don't give a shit what the stats say. There's no defense better. Of course, they're the number one scoring defense, and that's where they're really good. And when you don't have to worry about a run game with Buffalo and you just have to worry about the pass, yeah, advantage Patriots.
A couple of things
really
showed up there. Before we move on to the last play, Josh Allen, for the most part or a number of times, putting the ball where it needed to be in that win. Amazing with the RPMs and the spiral. You talk about arm strength. Having those two things, the ability to put that spin on it, allowed him to have, you know, kind of moderate success. Patriots DBs made three plays on balls on third and fourth down. that were
phenomenal, top-notch,
outstanding.
That's right.
Difference in the game.
That's right. No DBs are coached better in football than the Patriot DBs. Let alone they have a ton of them and they're versatile in all that they can do. And I'm glad because I've said this other places and I haven't got a chance to say it on my damn podcast here. As amazing as it was that the Patriots only threw the ball three times and won, it was equally as amazing as, wait, one team doesn't even want to throw the ball into the wind, kick a field goal into the wind, or even punt the ball into the wind.
Yeah.
And then the other team got to a point where they said, fuck it, we got to let our guy just throw it.
It was about 50-50.
And he threw it right through the wind.
Amazing.
All game long.
Yeah.
Freak show.
Just for like a fun exercise, next time, wherever you live, next time there's a wind over 30 miles per hour,
go out and throw it.
Get out 10 yards from a tree
in
front of your house and just see if you can hit the tree. It's damn near impossible.
No doubt. Especially going into the wind.
Yeah.
I know. And that's what's amazing. I mean, the 50-yard bomb that Diggs dropped in the end zone.
Yeah.
The play at the end of the game on the fourth down when he runs to the right. Or no, it's the third down play. He runs to the right and throws it to Dawson Knox in the end zone. The ball got knocked
great
down.
Play.
But great play. 30-yard throw.
I know.
Into hurricane wind. Oh, no big deal. It's Josh Allen. Don't worry. He'll just throw it right through it.
Insane.
You know, it's very special. I hope everybody realizes it. And again, you'll see that's they're too Josh Allen-centric. There's no other way they can win games. He's got to run. He's got to throw. He's got to do everything.
One more play. We finish up with a little love for Jared Goff and the Lions' first win.
Oh, baby. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. So here we go. Oops, I'm rolled up on the cord. All right. So play, pretty simple here. I mean, the play is – this is kind of a staple play for a number of teams in this situation, and a gotta have it, right? You're going to run this guy down the middle to take away this guy, right? They're going to run this guy down the middle to kind of take away this guy. Also, within doing that, of course, these guys start to cheat over, and what they teach him to do is, you know, inside shoulder at this safety and just try to, in the corner, excuse me, Dantzler, and try to find a spot right here to where Goff will hit, you know, as soon as he sees you making your break, that we could throw it low in the end zone and give you a spot to catch the ball. And even in case this guy doesn't go too far this way and he's sitting on the route. All right, so boom, here we go. And really, here's the problem with the play. You know, there's two things. And again, it's a great throw. It's great anticipation by Jared Goff to kind of feel it as soon as he's coming out of the break. Amon-Ra St. Brown at first didn't even look like he was really ready for the ball. Watch him down here. Watch him down here. I mean, he looks like he's shocked when he sees the ball coming. At least he did to me. Like, oh, gosh, it's here. Like, yes, it's here. And to me, this is where the play was messed up. All right? One, like, stop backing up so far, Dantzler. Right? Stop. At some point, you know, make him run into you or be right here to where there's going to be some contact. He's going to run into you, whatever. But they're not going to throw the go route at this point behind you. Okay? So do something there. But really where it all gets messed up is right here. That this defender cannot get pinned inside by the wide receiver. He's got to let this guy cross his face, and he's got friends over here. Friend. There's friends everywhere. Don't worry. You have no business worrying about if he goes over there. That's not your area. This is your area, right here. And as you'll see, he gets pinned, and now there's no underneath coverage, right? So that's where the play went wrong. And he just did not need to do it. You know, again, what I would want to tell you is at this point, you see, I mean, if he just lets him go here, first off, there's a body here, a body here. They got arms that they can raise in the air. He's here. There's no reason for you to worry about him. And that's where it really got, you know, messed up. He needed to keep his outside leverage so then he could therefore follow Jared Goff's eyes and really would have been in the lane of the receiver. But because of that,
what do you think
touchdown,
about the Vikings secondary so deep.
Too deep. Right. That's where I was saying, like, you know, Dantzler at some point, like, first off, to where you lined up, okay, at some point, hey, he's going back a little. Okay, that's fine. But, like, how much farther are we going to go back? Like, he's still in the back. Like, I'm going to protect the go route here as Goff is gearing up to throw the football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that to me is where the real mistake is made between him and, I'm blanking on 24, that is Mackenzie Alexander, okay?
Yeah, it's those two guys where they just don't challenge it. But I think more of it is actually on Mackenzie Alexander than it is Dantzler. Yeah, I'd like to see Dantzler stop right here so he can compete and get in, maybe get a hand in the football. But, you know, it's like a – this is like a de facto quarters coverage, right? These guys are kind of responsible for this area right there. And Mackenzie got smushed in there to where it just leaves a huge gap. And again, like I like to say here is like, you know, imagine if he now is on the outside shoulder and just sitting right here, right? He's sitting here. Boom, he's going to intercept it. He's going to knock it down, whatever. But the fact that he got pinned inside by the receiver, that is really what caused the open hole for Jared Goff. Nice little end of the play, end of the game play.
Nice little end of the show play there for
you. End of the show play. It's a Drew Brees. When he saw the play, he goes, oh, that would have been the play we would have called if I was with Sean Payton. You know, I know we had that play. I want to say Josh McDaniels. You got one player from the 12-yard line. You got to have it, right? Those are the kind of things you dial up because you're going to see that type of coverage more times than not.
Right.
Just that umbrella-type defense, and there they got that guy pinned in, and it was all over.
It's got to be verbal exhaustion for you at this point.
It is. Verbal exhaustion.
I've made it talking to the end of the game.
I've been talking for 3.5 hours today.
There's a show.
There's a show. That's a show, as Paul would say. I appreciate everybody chiming in with the questions, observations. Always love that. Paulie, you the man. Way to drive the ship.
Thank you,
buddy. Paulie's got a Zoom meeting he's got to get to. We've gone too long once again. That's what we do here on Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. Thursday, Chris Sims, PFTPM, collaboration, picks podcast. Florian and I have been pretty good with our best bets lately.
How good?
I mean, 2-1 a number of weeks in a row here, so we'll see. I mean, we're 66%. Right, and picking our three best bets of the week. So we'll see if that can continue. Please check that out. As always, thank you to Under Armour. That's it. Peace out. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you.
Have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend.
Yes, yes.